Were you trying to get crazy with this, eh? Don't you know I'm loco?
What is going on, everyone? Welcome back to another episode of the Wizards of Gallery Place podcast. Brendan and Dama back in the show. It is Monday, May 13th. The NBA draft lottery was yesterday on Mother's Day. Happy belated Mother's Day to all of your mothers involved. If you guys have wives or anything like that with children, I know everybody's got a mom around, apparently. That's the rumor anyway. But anyway, if there's any mothers listening, happy belated Mother's Day to you, and thank you for taking the time to listen to this pod today. Anyway, Wizards got the number two pick, man. We haven't picked this high since we took Otto Porter back in 2013. I think that was, right? 2013? Yeah, it was 13. And then before that, we hadn't picked that high since John was taken number one overall in 2010. Obviously, Beal went number three in 2012, but it's been a long, long time since the Wizards have picked this high, and we've been so close so many times. We were close to getting Zion Williamson. We were so close to getting Victor Wembanyama last year, and then apparently we were also close again to getting the number one pick this year. But obviously, I think that we're pretty content with number two. We were number two projected coming into the lottery. Our most likely pick was number five, and then after that was number six. So the fact that we were able to stay at two, and we're going to have basically the choice of the entire draft to choose from, save for who is expected to be Alex Saar, but I wouldn't mark that down as a guarantee at this point. And we'll get into the Hawks and all that here in a sec. But, man, just in general, how excited are you for this number two pick?
I don't know if I would use excited. I would say I'm cautiously optimistic. Like, this was, you know, historically looking at the draft, you know, the number two pick usually isn't the pick you want to be, because that's usually where there's a lot of busts that go number two. But I trust this front office. So I like the idea that it's kind of the pressure is off of, oh, this is the number one overall pick, because it's like, we know that this class isn't like last year's or the 2003 class where, you know, there's a surefire franchise changer at number one. So the pressure is off. You can get a guy, you could take a gamble on a guy, and there's not the pressure to live up to be the number one pick. And you can just kind of get him in your system and develop him the way you want. And I think this draft, more than any, is going to be one where you really got to put your scouting hat on and do some real, real homework. Because I don't think any of this stuff we're seeing, like, I don't think there's any real consensus on, like, the top 10 in this class. Like, so... And this is the front office you want to have in a draft like this. You know, somebody that kind of has their own markers, their own type of player they like. Because in a draft that isn't real separation in these guys as far as their play and talent level, it's good to have an Avengers front office here that, you know, they're going to draft on traits in a certain type of player that they're looking for. So I'm excited because we have a new front office here, but I could tell you, if we had the same old front offices like we had before, I would be pissed in a class like this.
Yeah, you know what, though? I'm not going to complain because, again, it's been so long since we've had this high of a pick, and as long as you have the right front office, I mean, there's always going to be talent in every single draft. So, you know, it's going to be up to our talent evaluators, specifically Will Dawkins, and Travis Schlenk to find our guy there at number two. And we're going to get into the prospects here in a sec for the Wizards at the second pick. But first, I feel like we got to talk about the Atlanta Hawks going up from 10 all the way to the number one pick. And it is assumed that it's going to be Alex Saar, but I feel like there's just such a much larger conversation that's needed to have with this pick. And it's certainly exciting for the league that the Hawks are in this position, because the Hawks could do so many things with this pick, not only just the prospects they could take there. Obviously, they have the entire draft to choose from, and there's not really a consensus number one pick. But they could also trade that pick. And do the Hawks want to run it back to try and compete now? Maybe they have that number one pick, and they feel like they're you know, a certain prospect away. Or maybe they say, hey, let's trade the pick and trade back and maybe just get some more pieces in here. Or do they say, okay, we have the number one pick, where we may not ever have this again for a while. Maybe let's just rebuild, kick it off, trade Trae Young, trade DeJounte Murray, and we'll go from there. So there's a lot of possibilities here for the Atlanta Hawks with this number one pick. And if you guys didn't listen, I was on a lottery reaction show with Matt Moderno on Believe in Wizards yesterday. So if you guys don't listen to that podcast, please make sure that you check it out, or at least check out the episode. And Matt does a great job over there with him and former Wizard Jahadi White. So, but anyway, man, what would you do if you were the Hawks with this number one pick?
I think you got to take Saar, man. Like, I think they need to. I think it's time to kind of move on from the Trae Young era. And I think Alex Saar is kind of a good building block to kind of jumpstart that. If I was them, I would be fielding offers for Trae and for DeJounte, and I would go ahead and take Alex Saar number one and go from there.
So, given how the East looks, though, there's not even a part of you that would entertain, you know, what could we get back maybe if we trade this pick? Or what would happen if we trade back? Could we get a decent piece in return that could help elevate this roster? So from your perspective, though, is that there's no hope for that. You would rather just, nope, we're not going to try it. Let's just rebuild and start over and have a fresh slate.
Yeah, I think that's what they need to do. I just don't. I don't see them ever kind of getting over the hump with Trae Young as a number one option. I don't even think there's really an offer out here for the number one pick. You know, say if they try to package the number one pick plus like maybe DeJounte for something, maybe a vet or something to try to go and still compete. Because this draft is looked at, you know, isn't looked at as a, you know, very high ceiling draft. You're not going to get the type of offers you would with a number one pick in a previous draft. You know what I'm saying? So,
yeah,
I think it's just best that they just start it over. Rip the Band-Aid off, start it over, take Alex Saar to anchor your defense going forward, and then get ready for the 25 and 26 class.
If you're going to rebuild, and I know that we talked that this is an exception, like the Wizards had gotten the number one pick. I think that the consensus is you go ahead and take Saar. I'm not arguing that for the exception, but part of me does wonder, like, do you consider positional value a little bit for those rebuilding teams? And if you have, obviously, I mean, the number one pick in the draft, do you maybe say, okay, like, maybe we should try and make wings or guards more of a priority? Or you're just like, you know, despite all that, Saar seems to be the best player on the board. You know that he's going to be a multi-positional, versatile defender with offensive potential, and that's just enough for you to take him number one and not really consider anyone else.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, I just think Saar, you know, and I've kind of gone back and forth on this because I just evaluating Saar as like, you know, number one pick is not exciting. But evaluating him against the rest of this class, it's like, to me, he has the most tools in his toolbox that you can kind of, you know, high floor and maybe the highest ceiling if it all clicks for him. Because, I mean, he's a legit 7-footer and has mobility like a wing player. So if you can maximize his skill level, man, you're looking at maybe a Jaren Jackson Jr. or maybe a maybe an Evan Mobley with a jump shot. You're looking at that type of player, man. And, you know, that type of player can anchor your defense and maybe be like a third option offensively for you. And you take that every time.
Yeah, I'm definitely not arguing against that logic at all. And if I was the Atlanta Hawks, I would probably end up doing that as well. I think that sometimes, like, fans don't comprehend the optics of trading out of a high pick. And that's the same thing with the Wizards, and we'll get into that here in a second. But it's like, you know, these picks, especially with how the lottery works nowadays, it's not guaranteed that you're going to be – I mean, we've seen number one teams – fall to number five, fall to number four. So it's very easy for you to get out of that top three. So when you have it and you're a bad team or a team that's just not good enough, it's almost like you're forced into using this top pick. And we can kind of flip the conversation now into the Wizards, where it's like, you know, I mean, a lot of people say, you know, well, let's trade Kuzma and we can get number four and number eight for number two. And I'm just like, I don't even know if that's something to consider just because this team is so talent depleted. And I know it's only two picks, but I mean, you know, you got to consider in that situation, we're also giving up our best player. You know, I say all this to say, I'm just not so sure it's in the Wizards' best interest to trade out of this pick, because who knows if we're going to pick this high again. And I'm sure we'll still be in the, you know, top four, top five, you know, in the next year or two. But to have the number two pick, we may not pick this high again. And in a draft that's not as strong, maybe it's best to just go ahead and go with your gut and take the best player that you think is on the board when the Wizards are on the clock there with number two.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, but I will say for our future outlooks, we better be picking this high again, because we need the damn talent, especially next year, because that's a hell of a draft class coming. But yeah, I would not be trying to trade away this pick. And if you are trading it, you shouldn't be trading out of the top five. So unless it's a deal that's giving you still a top five pick plus some more, maybe another pick next year or in 26, I wouldn't even entertain it.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. And I think that the likely trade partner for the ideal trade partner for the Wizards in this case would be San Antonio. But then you just got to question what the Spurs are going to want back, because I think that, you know, if we could just do the trade straight up, you know, number four and number eight for number two, I think that that's probably a no-brainer. But then it's like for the Spurs, you know, maybe they want another veteran presence. So maybe they ask for a Deni Avdija, a Kyle Kuzma. And then it's like, okay, but then is that worth it? Because is that pick at number eight going to project to be better than Kuzma or Deni? And that's probably a no. You know, you never know. They got to go out there and play the game, these young prospects, you know. But it's you got to factor in how much better are you actually getting. And you also got to factor in, like, Kuzma's trade value. Like, if you could just get another pick on its own and another young player, is that more valuable than trading back two spots and getting another first-round pick at eight, which that player may or may not actually be any good in the league? So, you know, but let's get into these prospects specifically here at number two. And the beauty of the position that the Wizards are in is they can take anyone one through five. Because there is not one position that we have locked up where it's, you know, we don't need any more help at this position. We need help at all five positions. So that's why I like where the Wizards are in this draft, because there's not really a limitation on who they should select. And I want to get your thoughts just immediately. Assuming Sar goes number one, give me like three or four prospects that you would consider here with the second pick.
Yeah, for sure. You know, my draft philosophy has kind of always been kind of some of the same stuff that Dawkins has intimated, like positional size, athleticism, on ball creation, off the dribble creation, shot creation. So for me, I honestly, man, I would not even really consider anybody under 6'4" without shoes for the Wizards. So you can go ahead and take Reed, Dillingham, You can go ahead and take them off the list.
For me. I agree with you.
So I'm looking at Topic. Although I want to kind of see how he looks post coming back from injury, and I want to see what his measurements are, like his official measurements. I know he's still playing right now, but I need to see what his wingspan is before I really kind of make a real determination on his upside. But outside of him, I would say any one of Matas, Ron Holland, Cody Williams, and then I would say those three. I guess I would throw in Rishire. I don't know if I'm saying his name correctly. Rishire.
It's Reese Shea.
But he would be kind of at the bottom of my list on that. But I would put those three ahead of him as far as the win. And obviously Castle, because I've been a big fan of Castle. Sure. I would put those four first, and then I would look at Topic and Risha Shea, depending on what Topic's measurements come out looking like. But I'm looking at those four wing players first: Castle, Cody, Modest, and then Ron Holland.
So if you had your druthers, and take away the prospects here for a second, when you watch this Wizards team from this past year, and then kind of looking at how the team is constructed and how it may look for the next 2 to 3 years, what do you think that the Wizards need the most in this draft? Like, again, take away the prospects here. We can tie in the prospects into this conversation in a sec. But if you had your
They need a point guard. I mean, they've needed a point guard since John Wall tore his Achilles slipping in the shower, allegedly. They've needed a point guard. They've gone through about 7 or 8 starting point guards since that injury, from Sato to Ish Smith to Monte Morris to Russ to Neto to Tyus Jones. Like, they need to solidify that position. The problem is, I don't know that there's anybody in this class that kind of checks all of the boxes that a Dawkins front office is looking for at that spot. Particularly at the top of the draft. I think I would like somebody like Bub Carrington with the later pick, because he's only 18 years old. He's 6'5", and he has some really good shot creation chops. But I wouldn't take him at number 2. So it's just it's tough. And then Dillingham, he's tiny. He's 6'1" without shoes, 160 pounds soaking wet. So this isn't, you're not gonna get you're not getting a elite floor general, I don't think, in this class. So it's like, maybe you have to punt on that position and just go BPA at another spot.
Yeah, I would like for them to get a point guard too. Definitely not against it. And I think the two, when you consider that they're probably not going to take Dillingham with that pick, so it automatically goes to Topage and Stephon Castle. I'm going to kick back a little bit though on Risa Shea, because that is who I would select if the Wizard, assuming Alex Saar is gone, and once the Wizards are on the board at number 2. I know a lot of people don't like him because he doesn't have a bag, but I mean, we got to remember, these kids are 18, 19 years old, specifically in this case, coming from a European league. And I think that one of the concerns I do have, though, with taking him is, and I mentioned this on the reaction pod yesterday with Matt, is if you take another wing like that, because that's essentially almost what we're talking about, the same type of prospect that Bilal almost was, where it's an athletic wing, can drive, can shoot a little bit, but is he going to have that it factor at the next level? Is he going to learn how to operate in the mid-range, get his own shot, and be able to create for himself and others? It's the same thing we're asking about Bilal right now and what we were asking about him last year during this time. So the thing that may kick back is, what if both of them don't work out and they both just end up being somewhat 3-and-D players? Well, now your franchise is set back probably 5 or 6 years at minimum, and you're going to be picking in the top 5 for a really long time. And we just turned into the Detroit Pistons, and that is not ideal. But on the other side, if they both bloom, then you're probably set for the next 10. So I think that it's tough to kind of weigh. You want to come away with something that's guaranteed, but also this is a process, and is Will Dawkins going to go away from his strategy? Because Will Dawkins seems to like the raw prospects, where if you can just add some skill here and there, you know, as it pertains to shot creating, shooting, then you may have one hell of a player. And Risa does have the physical tools and attributes that I think Will Dawkins will like. I think it'll just come down to, does he think that he'll turn into a guy that can create at the next level? And I think that he can. Again, the guy's 19. And the same thing we could say for Bouzelis, who I'm sure we'll get to here in a sec. I know that that was one of the guys you named, like, freak athlete at the position. But, you know, will they be it at the next level? Will they be able to defend the other elite wings at the next level? How versatile defensively will they be with switching and all that? And I think that Risa fits that mold actually really well. So when I look at the all-around player and the potential that they have, that's why I would take Risa with the number two pick, assuming Sar is off the board.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm having trouble seeing what Risa offers outside of his spot shooting. Because I like that about his game. Like, he can play off the ball, and you kind of need, I think the Wizards could use that when you're looking at a team that already has Bilal and Denny on the roster. Because you're going to go another wing. You don't kind of want to be redundant where you have three wings that need the ball to be effective. And Risa Shea, to me, could slide, you know, off the ball pretty comfortably while you build out his on-ball game. It's just that when I compare him next to the other wings in the class, I just feel like some of the other wings offer a little more upside as on-ball creators, playmakers, and even defenders, athleticism too. So that's where I kind of pause with Risa Shea. But I like the thinking of it, because we do need a big shooter. Like, we need a 6'8 version of Corey Kispert who can play defense. Like, I like the prospects of that. But, you know, at number two, I'm trying to go star hunting. I don't know that I'm good with the prospects of like a Cam Johnson type player, number two overall. You know, solid defender, 6'8 wing that can shoot the three really well. But he's not really moving the needle for you in your prospects long term. I would like this front office to kind of aim higher. But if Dawkins and them believe that that's the guy, that they can slide in and he fits with the rest of the team and what they're looking for the future, I'll get behind it. No doubt about it. But that's why I look at somebody like Castle. Right, like he's going to probably measure 6'6 with shoes. He's already an elite defender, elite athlete, and you know he has playmaking chops because he played point guard in high school. So, and I think he averaged even as like a third, fourth option at UConn, he still was averaging like 4 assists per 40 minutes or 36 minutes, which is more than any of the other wings that we've really discussed. So how would he fit? You know, but there are questions about his jump shot. And you can't have too many wings on your team that can't shoot, because we were just talking about that with the Pistons, right? So it's going to be interesting. It's going to be Dawkins and crew, they're going to have to earn their salary this class, man, because you're going to really have to peel some layers back and really dig deep to figure out who is going to be one of the better players in this class, because there's no obvious answer here.
Right. And so I'll ask you really quick, and I know that there is a lot of time between now and the draft, so this is subject to change, and no one will hold you accountable. At least I won't hold you accountable for this, and I already told you who I would pick. But if you, as of right now, who would you take at number two if you had to pick?
I'm a stick with where I've kind of been, man. I'm going to go with Cody Williams. I think he has the most to his game, and I trust the pedigree, having his brother already in the league. You know, those two are going to be working out like hell. together in the summers to add skill to their game. The only thing I worry, and Cody, you know, he measured 6'6" and a half without shoes. So he's 6'8" with shoes. I believe he has a 7'1" wingspan, but he came in at only 178 pounds. That's a knock, right? But yes, I watched how Jalen Williams, his older brother, kind of added weight. Like, he looks way bigger now than he did draft day. So obviously an NBA and NBA weight and diet program, Cody can put on 20 pounds of muscle. He's also only 19 compared to Jalen being 21 when they came out. And then I look at the shooting, effective field goal percentage, true shooting, 60%, higher than all of the other wings we've talked about. And he had a free throw rate higher than all the other wings we've talked about, at playing at 178 pounds, right? So you're telling me the guy that has probably one of the longer wingspans has kind of that pedigree from his brother, has the best true shooting percentage of the wings, has the best free throw rate of the wings, 7'1" wingspan. Like, to me, and you've seen him play multiple positions for Colorado. He's played at the 1, the 2, and the 3. I just trust that more than some of the other stuff I'm seeing from guys that, to me, just have a lot of question marks as far as the totality of their game. So I would go Cody. Like, if Alex Sarr is not there, I would go Cody and keep it moving.
I think that the one thing that we do agree on in this sense, though, is that the Wizards do need to get some wing help. And while we agree that they do need a point guard, I think that there will be opportunities for them to add a point guard. I think the one thing that you could say against maybe taking a wing here is, there isn't a wing that should take you or that should prevent you from taking someone this year at number two. But I guess the argument is, okay, well, if you take Cooper Flagg next year, then how does that then affect everything, assuming we're going to be bad again? So not to like dig too deep ahead, because you can't predict where you're going to be. You can maybe predict a range, but we don't know if we're going to get number one next year. But I think that the takeaway is that the Wizards do need some wing help. Switching over to the point guards here. So the two to consider here, Topic and Castle. Now, I do have Castle ahead of Topage with my point guards. I did have Rob listed as number one, and the only reason I have Rob listed as number one is because I know that Rob is going to be a good scorer at the next level. Like, I know that. There is no one who can convince me that Dillingham will not be a good offensive player at the next level. So that's why I have him as number one, is because I know guaranteed what I'm going to get from him. The other two, not so much. It's kind of up in the air. And I have Castle over Topage because I like Castle more as a defensive prospect. And I like the two-way factor there, because Topage was just not good on defense. And it's something that he could fix at the next level very easily and be, at least a serviceable defender. And if you could tell me that that was the case, then I think that you probably put him over Castle just because of his potential offensively and his ability to read the floor. But as of right now, if it were a point guard, then I think that Castle would make the most sense for the Wizards.
Yeah, I like the idea of that. So Castle would be probably number three for me right now. I would probably go Sarr, Cody, and then Castle in that order. And then after that, it's Topic. Maybe if, depending on what his measurements look like, Modest, Ron Holland. But yeah, I like the idea of Castle as a prospect, as a big point guard. You already know he's going to be able to guard on the next level. Laterally, he's elite. He has size for the position. Like I said, he's going to probably be 6'6 with shoes. He's going to be great athletically. The question mark with him is the jump shot. Right. And if I'm looking correctly, it looks like he was one of the better shooters. He was the best shooter on the three-point movement drill. What is this one right here? This is the star drill, the three-point star drill. I don't know if y'all know what the star drill is, but I believe it's like you got to take 5 shots from each of the spots, and you kind of, it's kind of conditioning, running a star, and you shoot them. And he shot 18 of 25. So right now that's sitting in the lead for all the those that have participated. So that, like I said, that's not just shooting, that's conditioning, because you got to run to each spot.
Yep.
And you're taking 5 shots at each spot. So, you know, tired legs and you knocking them down NBA range, I don't know. You know what I'm saying? And I feel like at UConn, he didn't really get to show his game because they had Newton there. They had another guard there that kind of did a lot of the ball handling. So he kind of got the scraps after they got their hands on it. And he was still able to contribute to a championship. So, he would be, like I said, he would be number 3 for me.
Yeah, if we were going point guard, that's who I would select for the Wizards, even though I had Dillingham listed as my number 2 or my number 1 point guard. I wouldn't take him at number 2 for the Wizards just because of his size. And I do like Castle's potential. Again, it's one of those things where I would be leaning on potential and two-way tenacity over just what I know that I'm going to get, even though it may be pretty good offensively. And I think that Jordan Poole and Tyus Jones would factor into me taking a guy like Dillingham at the end of the day, because it's like, you know, you draft a player and then you figure out the rest later sometimes. But it's, you know, it would be a weird environment from a development standpoint to bring Dillingham and I think any point guard for that matter, just because, you know, we still don't even know what we're going to do with Tyus. We're assuming that Jordan Poole is going to be on the team next year. So it's like, if you have both or even just one of them, you're essentially relegating them to an off-ball kind of 6-man lead the bench type role. And I'm not sure that that's the type of developmental environment that you want your rookie point guard to be. And I think you kind of want to throw him into the fire right away. So that he catches on and gets those experiences earlier on where there's more pressure on him. Because at the end of the day, I think that the more pressure you put on a young point guard, if he has the right mentality, will benefit them long-term as opposed to babying them along. Like wings and bigs, you can kind of do that. Point guards, I'm like, you need to throw them into the fire and let them face it head on.
Yeah, for sure. For sure, man. That would be an interesting pick, man, because Castle, I think he could play next to Poole, or if you feel like Poole isn't long-term for you, he could play in place of Poole. But again, that swing skill for him is going to be the jump shot. Same thing with Bilal, same thing with Denny. So I would love that pick, and to me, it would fit Dawkins' MO, talking positional size, athleticism, two-way ability. That's why, like I said, that's why I like Cody and Castle, because I think for the positions they're going to play athletically and just overall skill wise, I think they fit what Dawkins is looking for.
Yeah, I definitely do too. And I think that it's going to be kind of the same thing this year that we were talking about last year when the Wizards traded up a pick to get Koulibaly. They're going to be leaning on length and size, positional size. And Chase Hughes did a little video spot with Wes Hall last night after the lottery and kind of reiterated those same sentiments and the type of player that Will Dawkins is going to be looking for. So, like you said, I think that we can kind of go ahead and rule out the Rob Dillingham and Reed Shepard category of player. But I think the Castle, Topage, Risa Shea, Bouzelis, those are the 4 that I would be looking at for the Wizards too. Taking at number 2. There are some Wizards fans that really like Donovan Clingan. And I'm going to be honest, I said this yesterday when we were doing the reaction pod, but to be honest with you, outside of like movement and a little bit more shooting ability, I know that Clingan apparently has been shooting well, but I didn't see that much of a difference between him and Edie. So I'm like, I wouldn't take Clingan. I'm certainly not at number 2. And I don't even think I would take Clingan like until maybe around like the 8, 9, 10 range. Like I wouldn't even consider him a top 6, 7 player in this draft.
Yeah, that's where I'm at too. Like, you know, right around 9, 10. I thought he would be perfect for the Thunder at 12. Because you can play him next to Chet. Or behind Chet, he gives you some some dimension, some size, which they lack. They don't have really a girth player on their team. And mm-hmm. I think he can give you that because he's a legit 7'2". I think he came in at 280. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, and you know, he can anchor your defense. So you're not losing anything on that front. But you don't also have to worry about him playing on the perimeter because you have guys like Chet and then also the other Jalen Williams, who's kind of more of like a big forward or undersized five that they use, and he's switchable. So I like that fit for him, but that's at 12. I'm not taking that player at 2.
Right. I don't think the Wizards should be taking a big that high anyway. Again, I think that Sarr is the exception there if for some reason he were available. But outside of that, like any of these other centers, I wouldn't take a number 2. I think that that would be really irresponsible for the Wizards to make that kind of selection. Now, we do need a center. I'm not knocking that. But just because of versatility and potential, like none of those bigs make sense for the Wizards at 2. It's either going to be Topic Castle or they're going to pivot and go to one of those wings, I would imagine.
For sure.
But, you know, it is exciting nonetheless. You know, number 2 pick, and we'll have a decent chunk of prospects to choose from. And I think the beauty of it is whoever they select, it may not be, you know, anyone's personal favorite. Like, and the who Wizards fans like, it's all over the place right now. And I think that it's kind of like that with all NBA fans right now. Like, everyone is going to have these prospects ranked differently. Based on maybe, you know, just one or two little things. And that's kind of how this draft is going to go. So really, whoever the Wizards take outside of a small guard, which we don't think is possible anyway, or a center, and I don't think that there's a chance that they do that, that we really aren't going to be able to be, you know, I feel upset at what the Wizards do at number 2, because we're just going to have to trust the front office that they know how to make evaluations. And really, based on consensus and box and everything like that, you know, I mean, it's there's not really one direction that the Wizards can point in here and say, yep, we're going to do this, we're going to do that. You know, it's going to be about the process.
Yeah, for sure. But I think, you know, people, every there's a lot of people down on this class, but I think this class is going to, you're going to look back on it in 5-6 years and be like, damn, it produced 4 All-Stars, you know, and it's going to be like, well, maybe it wasn't so bad, you know, so. We'll see. I hope Dawkins is able to identify one of them.
Yeah, for sure. Moving on to some of these other teams that are picking here. The Rockets have the 3rd pick. It is rumored that maybe they would like to trade out of it. If they would like to win sooner rather than later, I would imagine that they'll try and trade out of it. I guess the question is, and we were kind of bringing this up earlier when talking about the whole Wizards-Spurs trade scenario, you know, how much value are you actually going to get for trading this pick? Like, if you want to get decent value, you may have to trade from like 3 to, you know, somewhere in the teens. But then it's like, okay, you got to get someone in the teens that's going to want to trade up to 3. And it's like, you know, you still have almost your pick of the litter at that point at pick number 3. But I'm just not sure what kind of value they're going to get. And look, you're still trading for the top 3 pick in the draft. But I think that that's why a deal may not get done there, because the Rockets are going to want typical number 3 pick value, but teams around the league may be like, oh, hell no, not in this draft. But then it's like, you don't want to sell the number 3 pick. That player becomes good, and now you look like an idiot for trading the number 3 pick for 2 second-round picks and a role player. So,
yeah. Well, I think if the Rockets put number 3 on the up for grabs, I think they're going to be trying to get somebody like Mikal Bridges from the Nets. I don't think they're going to be trading a number 3 like how the Wizards traded number 5 for Mike Miller and Randy Foy. Like, they're going to be trying to get a legitimate starter plus level player if they're putting up number 3. I don't think they're going to just trade it for like a couple role players and a young guy. Like, they're going to try to get a legitimate starter to upgrade their roster, because they're trying to make the playoffs. You don't go get Ime Udoka. You know, they would be going into year 6 of their rebuild now. They're trying to be a top 6 seed. So,
right. Yeah. And relatively speaking, they had a decent year. They didn't have a bad year, you know, at least not as bad as it's been. And I think that they took a step in the right direction, and now it's okay let's try and stack on that and bring some real proven help in here that can help propel this mixture of veterans and young players that we already have, and, you know, maybe make a push for the play-in next year, which I think will probably end up being their goal. Again, I just question the value here. We talked a lot about this, but the Pistons falling from they were projected to be number one, and they fell to number five. Man, this isn't the first time for them that this kind of drop has happened, but you know, I still think that you could get a really good player at five, and who knows, maybe the player that they would have taken, you know, if they got the number two pick, will still be there at number five for them. I think that's kind of the beauty of it for them too, because I think a lot of these players, you know, will be in the same tier, and someone will be left over for them there. I question what player would be a really good fit for them. I think that Risa Shea would be a really good fit for them, like off the top of my head, but it's like outside of that, because I feel what we talked, they really need the shooting. And it's like after Risa Shea, there really isn't a lot of like shooting players left on the board at those wing positions for them to take. So where would you try and pivot if you were Detroit at that point?
Yeah, I mean, depending on how the board stacks. I mean, if Risa Shea is gone, say that if that's the pick for us at two, I think they got to go to next best shooting wing player. So that could be a Cody Williams. That could be a Jacoby Walter. I think either one of those guys. But they have to get a floor spacer. Like, they cannot go and take another guy that's shooting 20, you know, sub 30% from three. Like, they can't do it, man. It would be malpractice for them. Or otherwise, trade the damn pick. Trade the pick for a vet. Like, you have who you believe is your cornerstone pieces. Go get him some damn help that can maximize his skill set, you know, with Cade, Ivy, and Durant. You know? Like, don't go take another project player that's going to need 4 or 5 years to learn how to shoot the ball, because you're wasting time. You're wasting time.
Yeah, I would almost, if the Pistons could get a quality role player and maybe a future pick or something, I would consider trading out of this pick if I were them. Like, I'm like, how, especially with who may be on the board. Like, if Risa Shea is off the board, it's like, you're really not going to be able to get a player that really, really fits. Now, I do like the prospects of Bouzelis being a nice lob and transition threat for Cade, but... Yeah. I just question where you play him right away, like as a backup four.
He's more of a forward. Like, he's a four, but like he overlaps over Oser, because I think Oser needs to be a four to be effective, because he's such a horrible shooter. Like, you saw him, they were putting him in like the dunker spot, almost at like center. So, you know, kind of using him like a Sean Marion type player, but. Then if you draft Modest, like, he's going to be the four. So it's you know, they're in a tough spot, man, because it's not a lot of 6'8" plus high level shooters in this class. So you're looking at Risa Shea, and after that, it's like I say, maybe Jacoby Walter, Cody Williams. Like, that's about it. Everybody else, you're going to have to hope and pray that you can teach them how to shoot.
Yep, and that's why, again, I think that at the end of the day, Detroit will probably need to try and trade back and maybe get a shooter or something, because they really need the help in that department. It's funny, because if it was like, you know, we were picking at six and maybe we wanted to move up a pick, maybe that's just a, you know, we do a pick swap and we give them Kispert or something like that, you know.
Right.
But, you know, that's off the table. Again, we shouldn't trade out of our pick, and... the Pistons, I would like to think that they should trade out of it. But again, it's finding that trade partner, and are you going to get appropriate value? And this is going to be an interesting draft, man. I think it's going to be one of the more interesting ones that we've had in a while, despite the so-called alleged lack of talent in this draft. But I think that means that there's a lot more unknown, and it's a little bit more unpredictable, which is going to make this draft process a lot of fun. I mean, we've already seen it's all over the place. So this is going to be a fun draft process, and I'm excited to talk about it more as we get closer to draft day in June.
Yeah, man, it should be fun because it's just going to be unpredictable. I think like we don't know who the hell is going to go top, what the order top 10 is going to be.
Right.
Like last year, I feel like was more way more predictable. This year is like ain't no telling, man. And I could even see some trades, like some teams we're talking about now that could trade out of the top 10 altogether. Like you said, with the Rockets, the Pistons, even Memphis at 9, I could see them trading out of the pick. So there's no telling what could happen. Do the Spurs keep both 4 and 8? You know what I'm saying? Like, how long? What, you know, are they looking to draft 2 19-year-olds, or do they take one of them picks and go get a vet because Wimby is ready to play right now?
Right.
You know,
that is where I wanted to end this podcast off today, is talking with the Spurs, and we know that they've been kind of linked as to Trae Young as maybe they're a landing spot for him. You know, do the Spurs maybe try and use these picks to help land Trae Young there, or another point guard that can help elevate them and really get them to that next level? And so I wanted to get your take on that. Like, you know, and like you said, would they rather just take 2 19-year-olds, or is there a serious opportunity to upgrade here and bring in another or an all-star level player that can really help get the Spurs and Wembanyama to that play-in level?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, because he's good enough, man. You're basically – you got the defensive player of the year for the next 10 years, potentially a top 6, top 7 MVP candidate maybe for the next decade. Like, go get some pieces while he's still on a rookie deal, you know? Like, that could be Trae Young. That could be, you know, Donovan Mitchell. I don't know. But I would definitely be trying to explore it if I'm the Spurs, because you have the ammo to do it. You have the pieces. You have the draft capital to do it.
I think that this is one of those drafts, too, where it's like, even if you had to trade both of those picks to get an all-star level player, it might be worth it. Now, maybe it ends up, you know, maybe the other team will say, okay, no, we'll take 4. Maybe the Hawks will say, no, like we'll take 4 this year, but then we want next year's pick. And then, you know, maybe another pick after that that's protected or something like that. I don't know. I'm just spitballing. But, you know, if I were the Spurs, I think I might be okay with trading both of those picks if it meant bringing in another all-star. I am not that big of a Trae Young person personally, so I'm not sure I would trade both of those picks for Trae Young if I were the Spurs. But, you know, maybe their management feels differently about that, and they feel like he could be the next player to get them to the next level. And he'll make them better by default, just because the Spurs really don't have any, you know, that great of guards, not a good guard room. But no, I don't think that that's like the piece. And with the amount of money that he makes, I don't know, man, that wouldn't be the piece that I would take the gamble on. But it's like, you know, that the really, really good players are not available. So it's, you know, you got to kind of pick and choose and navigate, you know, who's available, who do you think could be available in the future, and does that prevent you from making a deal now? And I know that there's a whole plan and science around it, but, you know, I'm just not so sure that that's the move that I would make for the Spurs right now. Like, here's how I look at it. I understand that the fact that you could bring in people now while Wemby's on his rookie year, but, you know, the other side of it is, well, Wemby is still on his rookie year. He's 20 years old. You have time to figure it out. And if you draft 2 of these guys this year and they become, you know, solid enough players, you know, you can either keep them and keep building with them while they're on cheap deals as well, or then you trade those guys and then you can still bring in those star players that maybe you were trying to get before. So, I mean, it just I don't think that there's any one right answer here.
What I worry about that with that, though, is that Wemby is too good. Like, Wemby is so damn good, you're not going to be drafting top 5 again, probably, after this draft. Like, from this point forward, like with the Mavs when they got Luka, you'll probably never draft lottery again. Oh, yeah. No, I won't say lottery. You'll probably never draft top 10 again. Damn sure not top 5. So, and then you have a top 5 pick, but it's in one of the weaker classes. So what is the way forward for you to maximize the Wemby era? I don't know that it's taking 2 19-year-olds, right, in a weak draft. Because then you're going to come back next year and you're going to draft what? 13th, 12th? And you're not getting a franchise player there. And then now that's going to be second year now. So now we a year away from an extension, right? And he's playing you out of top 10 selections. So how do you get the elite sidekick to play next to Wimby unless it's via trade?
Right. I guess just for me, it's what type of player is going to be available. And I'm not, like, again, for Donovan Mitchell or Trae Young, it's like, I know that those are the two we talked about, but it's like, you know, I mean, yeah, it helps, but is it like a needle mover into that next tier? Like, or do you become a threat at that point? I'm just like, I don't know.
I think Trae Young versus Trae Jones is a needle move. Yeah, because it's not so much that Trae Young, it's not so much that I believe Trae Young is this perennial player. It's just that the alternative is Trae Jones. So, yeah, going from Trae Jones to Trae Young, that is a needle move to me.
Yeah.
Because they wouldn't have to give up a lot of players. Atlanta would be looking for draft compensation.
Right. They just want a salary dump at that point.
Right. So you would just throw in expiring salaries, maybe one young player or two, and then draft picks. And then you're getting Trae Young. And now you have Trae Young in what I think is the best role for him as a number two option. And you have defensive pieces behind him that can kind of mask for his deficiencies on that end, you know, with Sohan and Wimby, of course.
Well, listen, man, that's going to be a fun draft process and a lot of speculation. Again, a lot of teams could make trades. We don't know where any of these prospects are going to go right now. It's all a guessing game. And it's exciting to hear everyone's take on what certain teams should do. And it's going to be a fun process, man. And I look forward to looking at content, reading content, listening to content all the way up to draft night and the fallout after. So a lot of more draft talk to come. We are going to get into some player reviews at another time. The only one we've done so far is Bilal Coulibaly, and that was a while back. So we are still going to get into those player reviews, but felt like fans and listeners of the show would much rather hear us talk about the fallout from the draft lottery. So figured that would be a better conversation for today's podcast. But I want to thank you guys for taking the time to listen to another episode. Leave us a comment, review, rate us 5 stars. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.